Last but not least, we have Dr. Jonathan Coop, who is the director of Master of Science in Ecology and Professor of Environment and Sustainability at Western Colorado University. He specializes in the study and conservation of plant communities and landscapes in the Southern Rocky Mountains. Jonathan's collaboration with undergraduates and graduates traverses several programs examining the complex interplay of climate change, disturbance regimes, and human impacts on ecosystems. Jonathan nurtures students' professional development by encouraging them to create research and projects that resonate with their career aspirations. I think we've seen that illustrated this evening. Recently, Jonathan has been channeling his efforts into pioneering research focused on enhancing the ecological resilience of landscapes through strategic forest management. He leads insightful studies into the complex transformations forests undergo due to climate fluctuations and wildfires, and investigates the critical roles of forest residuals and refugia in supporting species conservation and fostering forest resilience. Moreover, he promotes the use of prescribed fires as an effective tool to fortify forests against potential future wildfires, showcasing a forward-thinking approach to environmental stewardship. Jonathan offers a diverse range of courses, including applied sustainability, ecology, environmental monitoring, and forest ecology, among others. He also facilitates senior seminars that cover various topics such as biogeography, ethnobotany, and landscape ecology. Welcome, Dr. Coop.
Thank you. That was whoever wrote that intro, thanks a lot. What a pleasure to be here. And wow, it's humbling to follow those previous three speakers. So really impressive so far this evening. So this evening, I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the things I've learned about fire over the years. The first of which is that now more than ever, fire has the power to transform landscapes and harm human communities. This is an area in the Jemez Mountains. This is near where I grew up, a place where I've been watching the landscapes change over the last 4.5 decades. This was a ponderosa pine forest when I was a kid, and it's since burned a couple of times at high severity. It burned again last year. It's getting hard to even tell there was a forest there anymore. This is the same area that James was talking about. And these kinds of transformations are disturbing and dramatic. These are the things that have kind of pushed me to do the research that I do, looking at, first of all, what are the factors that are allowing fires to interact with landscapes in this way? What are the consequences of these changes? And what, if anything, can or should we be doing about them? So we know that fire didn't always or necessarily interact this way with these places. Ponderosa pine especially has thick bark. The branches are held high from the ground. This is a very fire-resistant species. This is an example of a fire-scarred ponderosa pine that we sampled here in the Gunnison Basin. This is just outside of Powderhorn. The fire scars there reflect that fires were burning in this area at low severity over centuries and pretty frequently, right? This is every 20 to 40 years this landscape was burning. This is some work that my student Pete Simic led, and we see the same pattern everywhere we have ponderosa pine landscapes in the western U.S. Fire was frequent, it burned at low severity, and in fact, it sustained these landscapes. This is a picture from a historical photo from Arizona, but you would have seen the same thing almost anywhere you had ponderosa pines in the western U.S. Open park-like stands with grassy understories sustained by fire. Of course, the original inhabitants of North America and native peoples all over the world understood this power of fire to sustain and use this power. This is how they supported the meadows, shrub fields, and even, you know, giant sequoia forests in California were sustained by fire. This is how they cultivated plants that were of importance for food or other uses. and made grounds good for hunting. Again, just as James so beautifully described, cultural burning practices are one of maybe the most exciting thing that's happening in the field of fire ecology right now. The resurgence and recognition of these traditions. This is a colleague of mine, Margot Robbins, who's a member of the Yurok tribe in Northern California. And they're conducting fire for many reasons, including to grow plants that they use for basketry that only grow the right way after fire. And of course, it's increasingly recognized that this sort of fire is valuable for reducing fuels and reducing fire hazard as well. So, of course, there are species that are adapted to that low severity frequent fire, but also species that thrive with higher severity fire that's less frequent. So around here, aspens, lodgepole pine, spruce, these are all systems that experience fire that was moderate severity or patchy high severity fire, less frequent. Aspen is, you know, well known for these adaptations that after it burns, it resprouts from the roots. And in these systems, fire renewed these forests. This is an area just up in the up Ohio Valley where the low-lying fire is burning right now. If we look at historical records from the Gunnison area, the GLO field notes, the timber in the south part of the township was very good before the late fires. Great timber fires were burning in the mountains along Ohio Creek in 1880. In 1884, a large forest fire, which has been raging in the mountains above Baldwin, has done great damage to the timber in the section. And in 1885, a heavy timber fire raging yesterday in the gulch up Ohio Creek. So this is the area where the low-lying fire is burning now. And we can see that even, you know, some of the most iconic forests in Colorado really owe their existence to these historical fires. This is an aspen sucker shoot that's popping up in that low-lying fire footprint this week while that fire is still burning. So something changed in our history fairly recently. Really, the very beginning of the 20th century marked this shift in thinking in this country. And if you look at Gifford Pinchot, was the first chief of the Forest Service. In his early writings, he recognizes this beneficial role of fire. But in his kind of paradigm shift that led to the creation of the Forest Service, we see writing like this. Today we understand that forest fires are wholly within the control of man, and the first duty of the human race is to control the earth it lives upon. So fire became demonized and seen as this unequivocally bad thing, as exemplified in the Smokey Bear posters that are still out there, right? Fire suppression became the norm, and though the methods have changed since 1910, it's still something like 98% of all ignitions are suppressed. This practice of fire suppression has been really effective. This is some work that one of my students has led in review, looking at changing fire regimes in the Southwest, Arizona, New Mexico. We're using those tree ring fire scar records combined with modern satellite imagery to look at changing fire regimes. And we can see basically fires per decade across this entire area, you know, upwards of one fire every 10 years for centuries, dropping off after 1900 to basically nothing. Except for this little thing here. What's going on here? What's this uptick that we're seeing in fires all across this region? First of all, there was an unintended consequence of fire suppression that you're all probably well aware of. Fuel builds up on the landscapes, forests become more dense, and we have conditions that are even more likely to support fire, especially the kinds of fires that we might not want. So this is some repeat historical photography from Lassen Volcanic National Park in California. And we can see that shift from the open stands that are very fire resistant to incredibly dense fuel loaded stands that subsequently did burn severely in 2013. But we actually have much more challenging issues than fuel accumulations on these landscapes. These are three graphs. These are the only real data that I'm going to show in this talk. This is just data you can get from the National Interagency Wildfire Center, and the climate data is from NASA. This is U.S. acres burned since 1984, rapidly growing. And this is costs of federal fire suppression efforts over that same time frame. So the point there is that despite massive increases in expenditures, fire activity is still growing. And this is the cause. Temperature is rising. The warmer it gets, the more the atmosphere pulls moisture out of fuels. The fuels become drier. Drier fuels. We also have longer fire seasons. It's not rocket science. It's a lot easier to make a campfire when it's dry and warm than when it's cold and rainy. And that's exactly what we're seeing. In addition to shifts in, you know, growing area burned and more fire activity, we're also starting to see more and more extreme fire behavior and fire intensity. You may remember in 2020, the East Troublesome Fire that burned over 100,000 acres in basically overnight here in Colorado. Compare that to our lowline fire that's burned 2,000 acres, not quite 2,000 acres so far. So 50 times the size of that fire overnight. We're seeing more and more events like this occurring. Our research that we've done on this, it's a pretty clear relationship between temperature and the likelihood of these kinds of events. And when we project forward, we see that years like 2020 become increasingly common in the future. And the kinds of extreme fire behavior that we're going to get under a warmer climate is going to be orders of magnitude, or it's going to dwarf anything we've seen so far. In addition, landscape outcomes of fire are changing, right? This is a shot from the Hayman Fire that burned in 2002. This was a ponderosa pine forest. Ponderosa pine forests that burn severely over that large of areas have a very difficult time reestablishing themselves. It's just really hard for seeds to even get, you know, a mile into that patch to regenerate ponderosa pine. So these are systems that can handle some fire, but they really can't handle the, you know, almost nuclear bomb type fires that we're seeing now. And many of our fires are releasing far more energy than the nuclear weapons. So it's getting pretty crazy out there. In addition to that, warmer and drier post-fire conditions mean that the species that might have occupied that site historically, the conditions that they were established under no longer exist. And so some of these species are simply not going to come back because it's a different climate now. So these are some of the challenges that we're faced with. And not to make things too depressing, but, you know, we're still down here. I don't want to sort of throw my hands up in the air and say, well, climate change is humming, but it is. I think there's still a lot of work that we can do and should do to basically pick which one of these paths we want to end up on. Either way, we've got a lot more climate change coming at us, and we're going to feel those impacts. All right, so what's the solution? Well, here's a proposal from the XPRIZE Foundation. Better technology that will help us better suppress and or detect and suppress fires. So maybe we just need better means of stomping out fires. Here's a policy fix that just is working its way through Congress, though that'll probably slow down here. Maybe the Forest Service needs to be more aggressive in suppressing fires. Maybe we need to go back to the 10 a.m. policy, whereby all fires should be controlled by 10 a.m. the next day. Okay, my take is this is the same control command mentality that got us into the mess we're in, and it's not going to get us out. It's bound to fail. It flies in the face of ecology, and it's only going to make things worse. So there is another path. We know that one of the most effective means of reducing the likelihood of severe fire is with fire itself, right? And this is that same knowledge that indigenous communities have harbored and used for millennia. Prescribed fires or wildfires burning at moderate conditions can reduce fuels and make ecosystems more resilient to that inevitable next fire that might be burning under less friendly conditions. This is Western graduate Trevor Keenan putting good fire on the landscape up in the West Alps last year. So another way we can think about this is we can use that power of fire
to sustain and renew, to avert some of that power, to transform. This isn't necessarily going to be an easy path. I think we have to get a lot better at fire, and there's a lot we have to learn. But I also think that this is the path that forces us into the kind of thinking that we have to cultivate if we really want to embrace our role as stewards and co-inhabitants of this planet. I want to end with this quote from Vandana Shiva: "When nature is a teacher, we co-create with her." The challenges that we face, and of course I've oversimplified this fire thing dramatically to try and talk about it in 10 minutes, are complex. And fire is only one example of many daunting environmental challenges we face. They compel a broader environmental and intergenerational ethic, but I also think that they demand that we step up into our role as co-creators in a very deliberate and responsible way that maybe collectively we haven't necessarily done so far. And I also want to talk about the first part of this quote, "When nature is a teacher," because that speaks to my role here at Western and many of our roles here at Western. Maybe, you know, the thing you guys actually pay me to do, which is give students a few tools, you know, that next generation of students a few tools and opportunities to continue learning from nature. Thanks.